James Begley, welcome to Rooster Radio.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm genuinely nervous.
Yeah, I've never seen you nervous. You're kind of smirking and your eyes have gone all squinty.
Either that or I'm drunk.
Yeah, we are having a little frothy, which is nice. Now, this is kind of a bit of a thing that we're going to be doing with Rooster is interviewing each other every so often, because probably the big problem with Rooster Radio of late is there hasn't been enough of us. We've been investing too much time in the other people, and now we want to actually get a bit of glory and share our insights. Is that right?
It's true. I think also we've become much more comfortable in this format. And I think early days we thought we needed other people on every occasion, but looking forward to having a chat.
Absolutely. So in the previous episode, you spoke to me about podcasting, but I want to talk to you about one aspect of the business that you founded, Pickstar. So Pickstar is the place to book sports stars for any type of paid experience. I'm lucky enough to work with you, young man. But I want to focus on just one aspect of the business of Pickstar, which is the challenge of building and growing a marketplace. So this is going to be relevant to a lot of people out there who might be in the process of launching a marketplace style startup. They might have already launched one and they're struggling to get it to grow because it's quite a challenging space. Before we get into the nitty gritty, can you just give us a snapshot as to how Pickstar works?
Basically, Pickstar is a platform that allows anyone who has a need for an athlete to transact and connect with elite sports stars. So the traditional methods are, you know, people would hit up a club, or they would go try and find a manager where appropriate and then say, you know, how much would it cost me to get so-and-so to an event or to a party or, you know, for some type of commercial arrangement. And it has been a very fragmented way of going about it. And like most things, you know, marketplaces provide a really efficient way of working out who the best athlete and sports star is for your event. And the one thing that, you know, we're really big on is that we're non-prescriptive. So if you've got a budget and you've got a need, let the athletes decide who's interested, as well as catering for those who have a very specific need where they go, I want, you know, Andrew Montesi to be an ambassador for my brand. You know, they've got a very specific brief and the system also caters for that. So effectively it's clients pitch to the athletes what they want, and the athletes then apply if they're interested, and then the client picks which of the athletes they want.
Awesome. And you personally had the unique insight, having been an ex-AFL footballer and then entered the corporate world. So you've seen it from the side of an athlete who wants more paid opportunities and also the corporate who wants to engage athletes.
Yeah, I felt like I had a perfect storm of experience being a mid-range AFL player who didn't get that many opportunities and yet was really ambitious and keen to be doing more. I then also worked for the AFL Players Association running some of their programs, so I had experience within the AFL Players Association. I then spent 5 years, just a bit under 5 years, being involved at an AFL club, at Fremantle Football Club. So those three, you know, experiences over 14 years really gave me a good grounding as to what athletes want and how clubs are dealing with this space. Throw on top of that then 4 or 5 years of corporate experience where I got to see the appetite, you know, for people to want to connect and use sports stars for a whole host of reasons. So for me, I felt like I had an experience across all layers.
So it's obviously a big idea, and we can talk about a whole range of aspects of it and how you got it going. But on this episode, I want to focus on the marketplace, because you've got athletes, you've got to grow a list of athletes, you've got potentially their managers as well as another layer on top of that, and then you've got clients. And we've even spoken to other people who've kind of been in this space, not the same as ours, but dealing with athletes and managers, and it's bloody hard work. So you've had this idea, you've seen the need. where did you actually start in terms of building the marketplace?
Well, before I answer that, I reckon if I knew now what I knew then, there is no way I would have begun a marketplace. I mean, it's one of the hardest, I think, one of the hardest things to execute from a tech platform point of view. Like, I just envy those people that create an app and flog it off or literally just sell stuff online. It's like, you know, marketplaces are really complex things. I sort of think of it a bit like an, you know, a living, breathing organism. It's like an ecosystem, and it's constantly changing. But where did I start? Effectively, I just started with the thing that was most controllable, and that was from the athlete's side. So, like most marketplaces, you're going to have a few stakeholders. For us, it was athletes. And it was the people who needed athletes. I can't control people coming to our website and wanting to engage with athletes. What I could control was literally just getting some talent to sign up. So I leant on my network. I leant on the people that I'd personally known, the sports stars that I'd personally known.
Who was the first athlete to sign up?
Besides myself?
Yeah, besides yourself.
It's a good question. I actually think it was my mate Scott Stevens. Who played about 150-odd games for the Adelaide Crows. And I might have fired a texty. I know Lenny Hayes was in the top few. I've actually got a picture of the first few signups. And, I mean, for me, this was one of the better strategies that I had in the early days is after my first failed attempt from a website point of view, I just created a landing page and I thought, let's just get the athletes to sign up and actually have nothing behind it. Let's see which of the athletes is genuinely interested in doing more commercial work. So
a true MVP, landing page yep. with a bit of info and then you manually handle everything in the back
yep.
end.
Yep. And I mean, we didn't even have a drastic, inflow of opportunities. It was literally just, if I can get, my thinking was if I could get 60 or so current and former players of note, then I could go to the market. Then it's kind of like I had something. That for me was the first domino. And you feel like you're constantly lurching between needing opportunities for the talent and the athletes and getting talent to sign up in the early days. But for me, I just literally sent out text messages and said, boys, I've never called on a favour before. Now's the time. Would you mind signing up if you're interested to my website? And I think we had about 40 or 50, pretty current players and some good names sign up. So that was the first thing. I reckon that took a couple of weeks.
And what was the initial feedback from the athletes? Obviously, you were pitching the idea to them, telling them what it was all about. You probably didn't have any opportunities on the table at the time, but what was the reception from them like?
Look, it was fantastic. I mean, they're really keen, and that's, I guess, what gave me some heart is that there was a real desire from, you know, especially AFL to want to do more. But like most things, as I've experienced in this process, you know, good ideas and even people being interested and positive about what you're doing doesn't equate to much. Everyone can get an idea up that's fairly positive and everyone goes, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, that makes sense. Why didn't I think of it? That doesn't mean much. So the complexity then comes, right, now we've got 50 or 60 athletes on board. Now what do we do?
So what did you do? What was the next part of the ecosystem?
Well, I think initially I was manufacturing some. So my business, my consultancy really did need athletes to co-facilitate
so
with
just
me.
To be clear, that's your leadership consultancy that you were also yep. running at the same time.
Yeah, and that for me was a great test case. I started texting a few of the guys even before I got the landing page up to say, look, I've got an opportunity for, you know, a few hundred dollars to co-facilitate a corporate session. Who's interested? And I would get six or seven texts back, you know, two or three guys that say, yeah, I'm up for it. A couple would say, I'm not available. And I thought that's a pretty cool little idea right there. And what could happen if I managed to scale that idea is kind of what I was thinking.
Pretty funny in that in those early days, you were the entire marketplace. So you're the founder.
Fantastic for case studies, really bad for the bank balance.
You are the client.
Mm.
Technically, you're also the athlete.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I didn't give myself too many gigs. Yeah, it was, I think from what I've listened to in other podcasts of people that started marketplaces, you know, manufacturing opportunities and kind of getting the system and the ecosystem going by, you know, being really hands-on and really manual is a fairly standard way of approaching it. So like in the early days, I would literally go to my network and say, you know, here's a bunch of athletes who's interested. We had one, I think the local beautician got a few of the hockey roo girls in to do a bit of a makeup session. And I literally went down and took some photos and posted them on Facebook. I don't even think Instagram existed then. Posted it on Facebook. And that was a case study. And I, you know, honestly, I think it was about $50 was transacted, you know. But in the early days, you don't really care about the financial. You just want to prove, can this concept work at a small scale? I think that's what I was attempting to do. And so as those opportunities came in, you also learn the system and you learn all the steps required to go from the point at which a client lodges an opportunity on your website through to then the delivery of that opportunity. And I look at, you know, all the Upwork and, you know, Freelancer, and you look at, you know, high pages, all the marketplaces, and they make it look easy, but there are so many steps involved, like a huge number.
Particularly when you're talking about a marketplace of people, not talking about just moving products. You're talking about people who have human needs, human interests, human problems, changes of plans.
Yeah, the logistics of getting to an event and where does an athlete park?
What do they wear?
What do they wear? It starts at 7, but what time do you want them there? You know, so all those little intricacies, I think, in some ways become work to your advantage, because if you can find a way through them, it then means what you've created is so much more valuable and so much harder to replicate. And that's the end game with marketplaces, isn't it? When you look at real estate, well, realestate.com.au, okay, domain. You look at Seek, you look at car sales. Generally speaking, sort of it's a winner take all kind of scenario. So, and that's because once everyone goes online to actually book someone, they'll only end up going to one place. It's sort of one place becomes synonymous with that market.
Okay. At what point did managers come into play?
Well, pretty early, because I always knew that. I always thought managers are going to be really wary and threatened by this. In some ways, putting up barriers between athletes and opportunities sort of increases their market value. So my attempt to kind of open up access and say everyone's got a right to at least pitch an opportunity and letting the athlete decide kind of goes against that. So I think early on we had a manager in Perth who absolutely steamed me on the phone. You know, and it was a bit of rhetoric. It was a little bit of like, you know, hot air. But I thought at that point, if they're threatened by it, that kind of means that we're onto something. However, what I didn't appreciate in the first instance was how much managers are needed. And, you know, you can throw in, for where we are in an athlete-centric marketplace, not only are there two stakeholders, but you've got managers, then you've got clubs, then you've got industry bodies, and all of them want to have a say in what that talent is doing. From commercial arrangements that might contradict sponsors through to clubs wanting to prevent players doing something if it's perceived to be not, you know, in the interest of their performance. And so it literally began once I'd got the initial 50 or 60 names and once I'd got a few good case studies, it then was a process of coffees and meetings and talking to managers, talking to people, in the Western Australian football clubs. It was trying to sort of explain that what we're doing is about, you know, creating a framework where these things, these transactions can occur. But if you don't want your guys applying for things, that's fine. Just tell them not to apply. But we still want to create the opportunities for them.
So what was the initial reception like? Or what were the kind of perceptions of managers when you first brought the idea to them?
Well, to their credit, the good ones, and there were quite a few, kind of understood that they weren't going to be in the game to generate these small to medium range opportunities for talent. And so this actually sort of answers a few of their, you know, kind
problems,
of problems. Yeah. They just said, look, you know, we're not interested in kind of drumming up this type of stuff for our talent. We're really keen for them to do more of it. Go your hardest. Just keep us in the loop. And that's where I guess that third, you know, check and balance came in, and that when an athlete does something, we actually want to notify the manager. We want the manager involved. They, for us, provide some quality control. So, you know, there was probably 3 or 4 months of morphing the process. But once we did one opportunity with a manager's talent, it then, you know, it clicked for the managers, and they're like, yeah, we get this. Just keep us in the loop. And the rest has been, you know, just a matter of keeping them informed.
Well, the switched on managers, I'm sure, would realise that you're actually doing a lot of the hard work for them, and that you're just simply bringing paid opportunities to their door. It's just a yes or no answer. And you're not actually stepping on their turf.
No, but I guess, you know, in terms of the specific of the marketplace and where we're heading, is that we need them to be actively engaged in our system. We need them to be able to view, to be able to work with players online. And that's something which I never really envisaged in the first place. And that is, again, the idea of a marketplace is you can't predict what the market wants. You know, ultimately you want to provide a bit of a platform, and then that platform has to be able to morph based on the way that the people who use it want to use it.
So you're saying it's evolving into something where there's almost going to be a manager dashboard developed where the managers will actually be probably more hands-on than you would have initially envisaged.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. I mean, the feedback that we've had so far from the managers has been really, really positive. And again, if your marketplace is making life easier, then it will win. If it's more complicated and it makes life it makes the process harder, then you're not going to get the traction needed.
You've got the complexity as well of the fact that every athlete has a kind of a different arrangement with their manager, and that you might have an athlete that wants to apply themselves. They want to take control of whatever's on Pickstar. They want to apply for stuff. They want to be put forward, and they may or may not have a manager, whatever, they want to do it. Others might have a more blended approach. Manager might be involved, but maybe not everything. Others want their manager to just apply on their behalf. So that's kind of the issues that you're trying to manage within the system.
Mm, yeah, it needs to be flexible enough to cater for all the different models. I mean, if you can imagine, an Olympian might not even have a manager. So, you know, they just want to take control into their own hands and work with the system themselves and look at the opportunities. And apply on their own behalf, through to some of the highest profile talent who are more than happy for their manager to curate the system. And also they might switch off for, you know, a period of time and then go, okay, the season's finished. I want to go hell for leather and do as much as I can now, and be really sort of blocked about when they do things. And again, the idea is the system has to be flexible enough to cater for that. The big challenge and where I think marketplaces go from being a little idea to something truly, substantial is when you give it enough fuel, enough money, enough resources to basically scale the amount of opportunities coming in the door outweighs the talent on the system.
So from a Pickstar perspective, you've got no shortage of athletes on the system. That's one of the probably the misconceptions that a lot of people have, that getting athletes on your system is a really big thing and really hard work. They had no problem building that list, right?
Yeah, we've got 700 and never spent a dollar marketing to athletes.
Yes. Why?
Well, again, when I really looked at it, what is the core advantage of what we do is that athletes, if they sign up, they potentially get money at the end of it. So if I spend, I don't know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes filling out my profile and signing up, you know, I could get an opportunity worth maybe $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $200, whatever. It's a pretty good value assessment, isn't it? It's like, well, why not?
No risk.
No risk. Why not? And also athletes are sort of like cattle, really. You know, if one person on a team just sort of talks about, oh, I got this opportunity through Pickstar. Oh, give us a look at that. You know, they're all having coffee and all of a sudden you get three or four sign up in one hit. Getting the clients and acquiring the clients is the challenge. And if you can think about it, we're a volume-based marketplace. We need you know, thousands of opportunities per year. If you've got an acquisition cost and you can put any number you want in, but let's say it costs you $10 to acquire a customer or $50, you can extrapolate that out and go, well, you know, if you need 2,000 customers a year and it's going to cost you $50 to acquire each of those clients, then it's going to cost a bit of money in the first instance. And your brand has to be synonymous with where to go. And that was the other complicating factor in this whole process is people didn't know that this existed or was even possible. So when it's not like we're taking an industry and creating a marketplace. Mm. Like you look at hipages, the tradie industry already exists. It's obvious then why you would go to hipages. We found that people go, oh, okay, cool. You've got these sports stars. Oh, we don't need a leadership talk, so we don't need an athlete. And so you then educate them. Did you realize athletes can promote your brands online? You know, did you realize it can improve staff morale? Did you realize that, you know, athletes can, you know, work one-on-one and mentor some of your staff, take out one of your best clients, go to a birthday party? Like people didn't know that that could be a possibility.
So you mentioned that you've learned that marketplaces really need a heap of investment to light the fire, to really generate some heat and get it going. With that in context, how did you learn that through the Pickstar story? Once you got it going, you've got the two or three sides of the marketplace going. When did you think, right, you know what, like we're kind of spinning our wheels here. How do we go to the next level?
So after about 6 months, I think Nathan Powell came on full time and he did a great job. But I think what we found was that because our system was so manual, we could only ever handle, you know, 10, 12, 15 opportunities a month. Like the amount of work required to then manage those opportunities was too significant. And we were only ever going to improve if we invested heavily in our website. So we're stuck in this cycle of we need to invest money into our system. We're not going to make enough money to put into our system. So what do we do? And eventually, really, it clicked that, you know, we needed to get some funding to ramp this thing up. I struggle to see how you could spend the money required or make the money required from a bit of an MVP to then reinvest into your platform to then generate, you know, the true system that you want to create. Good luck to you if you can. But I look at all the marketplaces now and they all were backed heavily by Murdoch, Packer. You look at Fairfax into Domain, you know, they've all copped a big whack and that's what you're competing against.
Feet is heavily funded. So,
yep. Car sales, real estate. I mean, they're all backed in by, you know, the media companies. So for us, and, you know, we're still in that process now of building the system that's going to cater with significant volume, but we're fortunate enough to have now the working capital to invest in that platform and we're burning money. We're spending money. It, you know, costs us every month to pursue this
But you get to a point though, don't you, when you look at the projections, there is light at the end of the tunnel. It's not like a Silicon Valley tech startup where you're just plowing money and without a potential time when you're going to be profitable, but you can actually see it with a marketplace.
And that's the beautiful part about it, isn't it? It's like, yeah, we're not building up, 50 million users and then we've got to work out a way in which we've got to commercialize that. Every time we successfully make a connection, we make money. So it'll come down to, is what we're spending growing our business quick enough to create the profit required to keep the business sustainable and keep us on track. And there's always room to adjust as you go. It's never an off-the-cliff situation where you wake up one morning and it's like, oh shit, it just doesn't work. Every day there's little things that you can be doing to, enhance your social media, enhance your AdWords, spend less in certain areas, spend more in other areas, look at your customer acquisition cost, review how much your marketing dollar brings in revenue, and then go, right, if that's not working, what do we do? So, yeah, that is the advantage of, I guess, a transaction-based website.
So before we finish, to summarise, your three key tips for someone who is starting a marketplace.
Number one has to be, and it is a cliche, I've heard a few times on podcasts, gurus in this space say it, but it is so true, is you have to be manual and inefficient, and you've got to learn the process inside out and get the feedback from stakeholders as to what that system should look like, but do things which feel like this is ridiculous. Like me going down and getting some pictures of an athlete at an event and me personally texting and following up and reminding them a week out that I've got an event on, the morning of an event. Like I'm not sitting there going, well, this doesn't scale. I was doing it because it just had to be done. But looking back on it, learning that system and learning what makes athletes tick. Why do they accept some opportunities and why do they reject others?
And you're identifying every single little step that is in place from the moment an inquiry comes into the website to the moment that a payment is made to the athlete after the event's completed.
Yep. Second thing is don't be prescriptive about what you think the website should do. You've got to have a core functionality, get that. But your model has to be open enough and flexible enough that if for whatever reason you're slightly wrong, you haven't created and built this website then that can't be adapted. It's got to respond to what the users are asking for. And that was a temptation for me, is to create this initially, this big complex system which did everything under the sun, but in the end was difficult to use and wasn't actually what they wanted. So
Point three.
Get ready to spend some money. Get the humanistic element of we are going to burn money, and it doesn't feel good necessarily in the beginning, and also other people's money if you get investment. But have a very clear plan and manage the expectations of your investors that this isn't a website which is going to drive a profit in the first year or the second year. This is about creating an ecosystem which can truly change the way people behave and access certain things, and prepare them that their return will come maybe at a sale of a business or some other way, a liquidity event for the company. And that's probably wrapped into that is get investors who really support what you're doing and that aren't sharks, and the first hurdle that you're going to come across aren't going to work against you. And that's something that I've been super fortunate to this point is the investors that they get what we're doing and have been huge help. So yeah, I'll probably miss something, but
No, mate, I think you've summarised it beautifully. We're pretty much bang on 30 minutes. You're having the last sip of your Stone and Wood ale.
I have to pick up my son, Flynn.
Pick up Flinny boy. We'll wrap up. Thanks, mate, for sharing this one aspect of the business. Throughout the Rooster Radio series, we're going to continue.
I'm disappointed you didn't do rapid fire.
Well, that kind of, the last bit was kind of rapid fire, but I'm not, you know, we're calling it rapid fail because I'm so terrible at it, but it's become our thing. So thank you for listening to Rooster Radio. So that I don't have to post, record an outro, I'm just going to do it now. So
do it.
Visit our website,
put you under pressure.
roosterradio.biz. That's where you can sign up to our mailing list. We have events and stuff like that. We want to be able to continue to communicate with you guys and also find out who you are if you're listening.
Just to cut in, We have found that there are a whole bunch of people out there who are doing very, very cool things and having a crack, not in a big way, but changing their life with a view to pursue their dreams. And it has been an incredibly rewarding part of this podcasting journey.
It has. And we want to hear those stories.
Yeah.
So if you're listening in, even if you haven't done it yet, but you're thinking about it, we've had heaps of people who have just reached out to us. They've been listening and said, hey, I'm thinking about having a crack. I'm thinking about leaving the corporate job. We love catching up with people for a chat. And as I said, that's been a really good part about doing the events as well, is every couple of months we'll try and get people together and have a couple of brews and a chat, and it's brilliant. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/roosterradiohq. And finally, if you're on iTunes, we'd love a review if you're going to be nice. Thanks for listening.
5 stars.